are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
It's a dark day at the Thompson House with no Cardinal baseball, but I'll get by.
Wait, there's no Cardinal baseball?
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
You guys heard it here first on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. Mike Warner is accusing Gary Sanchez of delivering PEDs to the New York Yankees.
Someone's got to replace A-Rod.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm glad somebody read through the tea leaves.
Yeah. You're welcome.
I guess I'm a guest, but I'll just wait to be introduced.
We just like to see how long you'll go without actually speaking up and be like, hey, I'm here too, guys.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 163 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join with me on this episode are Mike and Matt. Matt, how you doing?
It's a dark day at the Thompson House with no Cardinal baseball, but I'll get by.
Wait, there's no Cardinal baseball?
Yeah.
What happened?
They decided to take a year off. Yadi Molina's tired of playing in October. He wants to go on vacation. So.
Oh, man. That sucks. It's been a long time since you guys were in the playoffs, huh?
Extremely long, yeah.
Oh, poor guy.
My little sister's 7 years old, and she's only seen one title, so it's terrible.
Yeah, my kid's six, and she's seen three titles of the Giants, and they're in the playoffs.
Yeah, screw off, man.
Speaking of someone who knows what it's like not to be in the playoffs, joining us also is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
Yeah, on the opposite side of things, I'm extremely happy that the race season's over. That way I don't have to watch this crummy excuse of a team continue to be terrible. So I'm very happy about that.
Future Cardinal Kevin Kiermaier.
Shut up. Shut up. God. But I'm definitely doing better than Chip Hale and Dave Stewart, who are finally fired and, you know, receive their consequences for the offseason moves that they made. RIP Shelby Miller and such. But it's nice, man. It's nice. Playoff baseball is here, and I can't wait to see how it all plays out. I feel like the whole thing is wide open, and this is exciting. So let's see what happens.
What do you think the Atlanta Braves are going to do without Dave Stewart in the front office of Arizona? It's like their best scouting director is now out.
Yeah, they can't, rip him off in any trades anymore. I don't know, man. I guess that they lost a massive asset here. Maybe, he'll go to another team. Maybe some team, maybe the Padres are going to be stupid enough to grab him or something, and they'll end up getting Hunter Renfro or something.
Yeah, I don't know what. Do you have any ideas of who Arizona should sign?
I think they should go after Jason McLeod for the Cubs, player development guy. Personally,
yeah, I don't know. It's wide open. I don't know player development guys as much, so I'll look into it whenever they get hired.
Well, but La Russa, La Russa's still there, and he's probably going to be kind of running things anyway, so it's going to be hard for them to get a good GM that's willing to come in and kind of be powerless.
Well, they haven't really given La Russa an actual role yet. I don't even know if he will continue to be there. We'll kind of see how it plays out, but I don't think La Russa is going to be calling all the shots like everybody thinks. If he was calling all the shots, I don't think that the Diamondbacks would have had such a rough offseason. I can't imagine he was the guy in there trying to beat that drum of getting all of those, trades done with the Braves. It's just the inner workings of a front office that we have no idea what happened. But, Chip Hale and Dave Stewart should have never even been there going into this season. So, I think this is long overdue.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Joining us tonight as a special guest, we have Joe Pitaliski of Baseball HQ. Joe, how you doing?
I'm good. It's like you buried the lead. You buried me.
I know.
5 minutes into the podcast.
I was throwing people off.
I'm like, I guess I'm a guest, but I'll just wait to be introduced. But I am glad to be here, so that's good.
We treat our guests the right way here at Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
We just like to see how long you'll go without actually speaking up and be like, hey, I'm here too, guys.
I was trying not to laugh in the background, like, who's the mystery hard breathing in the background.
That's any podcast that Chuck Anderson's on. And then also, we don't call Justin the best host for no reason.
How dare you?
did you pronounce his name right, by the way?
I don't know. Joe, did I pronounce your last name right?
It's Pitleski. But
that's what I thought. That's what I thought.
There's no way in hell Justin pronounces people's name right.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a hard time for those of you who are newer to the podcast. I have a really hard time pronouncing last names to begin with. So I was gonna be kind of SOL. I forgot to ask you before we started recording how to pronounce it. But Joe, tell people where you can be reached on Twitter and social media, and then kind of what you do over at Baseball HQ and any other kind of promotion things you want to throw out there.
Yeah, so I'm at Baseball HQ with Ryan Bloomfield. Mike Warner's there, obviously, and I'm at Shoeless Joe P. And so you can reach me there on Twitter. I write their PT Tomorrow, their Playing Time Tomorrow column, and I'm primarily focused on the NL West, and so that's what I've done pretty much from like the second half of the year onward. And I'm also writing at Today's Knuckleball, which is Fangraphs Sports. And I'm doing Rangers content for them since I live in Texas. So that's pretty much kind of where I land and where I, you know, reside on what I follow and what I write about. So, and then you guys should make sure that you make plans in the next 30 days to come to First Pitch Arizona Baseball HQ. We're hosting the best, I would say, fantasy symposium in the country. We'll be going to Arizona Fall League games. We've got the assistant general manager from the Padres coming as a keynote speaker, and everybody who's anybody in the industry, from Eno Saris from Fangraphs, Jim Callis from MLB.com. I mean, there's just a star-studded lineup. Ron Chandler of Baseball HQ and now ESPN. There's just going to be a ton of people there. So if you guys want to come, I can give you $100 off registration. But so contact me on Twitter, and I'll tell you how to do that.
Nice. And our very own Mike Warner is going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why I wasn't one of the feature names, Joe, so I appreciate that, but no,
you know,
go ahead.
You're on the list. You're moving up. You're trending.
He's technically a footnote at the moment.
Yeah.
Gotta get your binoculars out. You can read his name on the bottom of the poster.
We all have to start somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be a ton of fun, though. I'm super excited. It's going to be something that I have been wanting to experience, so it's going to be nice.
Yeah.
Before we get started and jump into the kind of the list of players that we're going to be talking about, first I want to remind everybody that you can go to our sponsor, officialfantasyrings.com, use our promo code FWFB for 20% off on your ring from officialfantasyrings.com. Did you win your fantasy league? Of course you did. You've been listening to this podcast all year. So definitely go out, spend a little bit of that money, go get a ring, and make all your league mates kiss your ring all off season long and into next season as the champ with your amazing ring from officialfantasyrings.com. You can make it completely customizable. They've got a whole bunch of different styles and types, so that way it fits every kind of budget. Definitely go on there, use our promo code FWFB. And then before we jump right into the list, regular season's over, guys. It's time to, you know, kind of enjoy the playoffs as we kind of recharge for the next season and start looking at all the things we kind of did wrong. But before we do that, we got the playoffs on TV. Joe, your team, the Rangers, are in the playoffs. My team, the Giants, are in the playoffs. Mike and Matt's teams are at home watching just like we are. But I want to know, who do you guys think are going to win each pennant, and then who will win the World Series? Mike, I'll start with you.
I've gone back and forth on this. I'm going to stay true to at least the National League side that I was saying before the season started, and that's the Nationals. And then I'm going to go with the Rangers. I think that they have not just because Joe's on, but I think they have the strongest chance. I really like the way Yu Darvish has looked. The offense speaks for itself. They have a juggernaut of an offensive squad. So it's going to be really close. This is legitimately wide open, and I kind of already know who you're going to take, Justin, but I think that it's going to be the Rangers, and we'll see if the Nationals can make it.
All right, Joe, who's your pick for AL, NL, and then World Series champs?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Rangers, and I don't think I would say that they're the best team on paper right now, but there is something. Jeff Sullivan, I think it might have been somebody else on Fangraphs, wrote this great piece on their clutch hitting this year. It's just been a crazy an outlier, you know, to be honest. But there's just nothing in it. And I did a piece on today's Knuckleball on 36-11 in one run of games. There's something about being able to play tight games in the playoffs and not be phased in the sixth, seventh innings when you're down by a run, and they just have it. So I'm going to go with them. I think it's going to be a crazy series between them and Boston to get to the World Series. NL, man, I hate going against history, but San Francisco just, I got to go with them. The experience, I think they're going to beat the Cubs, and I'm going to say we got a rematch between the Rangers and the Giants. From what year was that?
That was 2010.
From 2010. So
the original Giants championship.
Yeah, crazy. I think the Rangers take it all this year. I think they finally exercised the demons. John Daniels did an amazing job at the trade deadline. I mean, you got Lucroy coming in, Beltran coming in. Desmond has been playing well. I mean, it's just crazy. I just think their lineup, I think their bullpen's going to make it happen.
And that Rangers article was done by Jeff Sullivan over at FanGraphs, so definitely go check that out. It's a good piece. I'll throw it to you, Matt. Who you got?
I have the Texas Rangers winning the World Series.
And against you?
I want them. I don't want to say, but
yeah,
no, I have the Cubs making it to the World Series, and I have Texas beating them purely because I want Carlos Beltran to win a ring. So I'm on that train.
All right. Well, that's a really purely selfish reason. So, and we appreciate that here at Friends Fantasy Benefits.
Hey, you want an analysis, and I'm not the guy for that.
Yeah, exactly.
I tell you, if we're right, we'll be the only podcast that I'll pick the Rangers to go to win the World Series.
Well, I'm not going to pick the Rangers. At the beginning of the season, I made a prediction on the two teams I thought would be in, and I had the San Francisco Giants, it being an even year, and as homer as that is, I really like their chances to make it through the National League. I've talked on Twitter, and then I think with you guys a little bit, that I think they match up fairly well against the Cubs, especially in a short series. So I think if any team's going to do it, it's going to be the Giants that'll beat the Cubs. And then I actually picked the Indians at the beginning of the season to make the World Series.
How are you liking that pick right now?
I'm not, but I'm sticking with it.
Enjoy that.
Yeah, right?
See if they can make it out of the division series.
Oh, man.
Yeah, probably not. It'll probably.
I'm looking forward to the Rangers Red Sox ALCS. That'd be sweet.
Yeah, it'll probably beat Boston out of the American League, but I'm gonna stick with my pick in the Indians, only because one of our co-hosts Cameron Miller and I have a bet from I think like halfway through the season. Where if the Indians make it to the World Series, all they have to do is win the American League. I get to own his Twitter avatar for like three straight months.
Wow.
And if they don't, he gets mine for a week.
If anybody has seen your picture, you know, from the Friends with Fantasy Benefits league page, then they should know not to have you owning their Twitter page for 3 months.
Yes, that is very true. What Mike is referring to was I was the 2016 champion from our Friends of Fantasy Benefits staff Dynasty League, so I've had the trophy all year long. I've been taking pictures with it all year long. And yesterday, Sunday, being the final day of the regular season, I took a picture of it with me while I was naked, and it was in front of my my crotch. So and then posted
it truly is awful.
And then posted it in our private league chat and league page. So and everybody was really, really excited to see it.
Yeah, the response was great. Absolutely wonderful. Yeah, I don't know about you guys. Back on the playoff front for a second, but I don't know about you guys, but the thing I'm rooting for the most is just for Jose Bautista and Rougned Odor to like face off again. Because like
that would be amazing.
I think it's going to be one of the best playoff matchups we'll ever see in terms of like just sheer competitiveness. And I mean, it would be awesome to see. I certainly am rooting for that.
I honestly had completely forgotten about that. And now that you've mentioned it, I could not wish for anything more.
We just want Fox on second. That's all I want is for him to get back on second base.
It's almost like the off the field action is better than even what baseball shows up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to see him hit like a double and just bat flip it straight at Odor's head.
Oh, or how about this? How about Odor hits like a game-winning walk-off home run and then like just flips the bat off like Jose Bautista did? Oh, my God.
He just stands there. Yeah. He just stands there and, and does it around the bases.
He would do that, too. Odor's a crazy son of a bitch.
Runs straight from first base out to the right field and, you know, just clocks Bautista again. Doesn't even round the bases.
All right. Well, this has gone off the rails already. Hope you've enjoyed the first 13 minutes of this podcast. And we still have our 11 listeners. We know we got Joe, so that we at least got one left. Let's jump straight into our list of players. And, you know, I put this list together with some interesting names, some that had gone already in our mock draft. Joe is in our mock draft with us as well, so I'm sure he'll reference it here and there. But also then some that had some interesting stat lines this year. And one, which was a little bit surprising to me, was how good of a season Carlos Santana has had and how quietly it's kind of come. No, I really haven't heard a lot of people in the industry talk about just how fantastic Carlos Santana's been this year. So, Mike, what are your thoughts on Carlos Santana's season, and what do you think his value is coming into 2017?
Well, this is actually a career high in terms of his dollar amount that he made for the year. He made $19 in 5x5 Roto. Again, a career high for him. I think that, you know, I mean, really his skills have maintained a solid, you know, distribution throughout his career. But the Indians' offense has just been much better this year. Fifth in the league in scoring, sixth in batting average. Last year they were, you know, in the, you know, what, 18th in scoring, and then, you know, even lower in batting average. So maybe this is kind of, you know, something that has to do with the Indians' offense just being better overall. If you look at his line, you know, 89 runs scored. I don't think that that's something that we can bank on going into next year. The 34 home runs is certainly something that, you know, power is something he possesses. So, you know, going into next year, we can certainly bank on him hitting at least 20 home runs again, because he's done that pretty much, you know, each of the last 4 years, if you count the 18 in 2012, each of the last 6 years, really. So, I mean, based on where you got him in drafts, you know, he was taken 200th overall, and, you know, he's performed. He's the 13th first baseman on the ESPN player rater. Again, somebody in on-base percentage leagues, that's an absolute asset. 350 plus on-base percentage in every single year that he's been in the majors. But like I said, you know, his in terms of, you know, the way that he distributes the ball and, you know, his home run to fly ball rate, all the kind of advanced metrics, things are pretty much the same. There's a little bit of variance here and there, but he's pretty much the same player he's been. He just kind of, I think, you know, just had the benefit of having an offense around him that was a little bit better. And he got to lead off a bit as well, which gave him a few more extra chances. So I think that he's going to be pretty much the same player going into next year.
Joe, what are your thoughts on Carlos Santana?
Yeah, I mean, largely the same. Contact has gone up, his career high, 83% this year. You know, his walk rate has decreased the last few years, but I mean, you're still talking about an elite 15% walk rate, which is just crazy. I think he's remade himself from a catcher, you know, where the expectation, you know, was X into, you know, a first baseman DH, where he's maintained his skills. And you know, I think he'll be 31 next year, and I think that keeps his value down. I think there's kind of inherent age bias once you hit 30 years old. So I don't think his value is going to skyrocket because he hit 34 home runs this year. But I mean, considering, you know, Eric Hosmer went in the fifth round of our mock draft, Adrian Gonzalez went in the eighth round, and Santana went in the 10th round. And I don't see why he wouldn't be at least as good, if not better, than either one of those players next year.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Santana?
Yeah, just echo pretty much what Mike and Joe said. I mean, it's incredible to see how he's transformed, like you guys said, from a catcher to a first baseman DH. That with maintaining this walk rate, he doesn't strike out, only 14%, matches his walk rate. He had 99 walks this year and 99 strikeouts, which I always like oddities like that. That's kind of cool. A guy like that, big credit to Terry Francona. You know, you get a guy with like Santana who kind of, you know, he's, I wouldn't say skinny, and Francona looks past all that and still manages, hey, look at that on base percentage of 366. I'm going to bat him lead off, and he did, and I think that's responsible for the uptick in the offense. I mean, Cleveland's had pretty much the same cast of characters for couple years, and this was by far their best offensive season. So, I mean, big props to Francona for that. Going in forward for next year, and on base percentage league, Santana is a monster. As mentioned, with a 366 OBP, which is consistent in years past, 357, 365, 377, 365 the last 5 years. I mean, that's dependable as it gets. His games played is always going to be up around the 155 range, which is all you can ask for. A guy that stays healthy and gets on base. Going into next year, I probably have him around the 16 to 20 range at first base and standard 5x5 because it's a deeper, you know, it's a shallow position. I got him 16 to 20, and I'm shooting. I would definitely be looking to get him from my corner infield spot for sure.
I'm surprised you would say that you would have him around 16 to 20. I think I might have him a tad bit higher, but I can't really fault you. Looking at the list, can't really fault you. Let's do a quick would you rather with Carlos Santana at the first base position next year. Carlos Santana or Albert Pujols?
I had Pujols ranked higher, but barely.
Joe or Mike?
Yeah, I mean, barely. I mean, I guess there's more power potential still. Pujols still had more power potential, but Santana's just been a rock. I mean, he's plays every year. I think he's got a better park. He's got a better offense around him. So that's pretty close. I would take Santana, actually.
So would I. I'd take Santana based on age alone. Based on age alone, there's no way that.
Age and health. I mean, the health for me with Pujols is there always seems to be something lingering with him, and that's when it's not something a little bit more disastrous.
Yeah, but he's gotten over, you know, 580 plate appearances or at-bats in, like, each of, you know, 6 or 7 of the last 8 years or so. You know what I mean? Like, he, as much as he's had health, quote-unquote health issues, he's been on the field. But, again, I'm going Santana because, I mean, Pujols is almost 43.
Yeah. would you guys do Carlos Santana or Brandon Belt?
Oh, man.
Santana for me.
It's Santana for me too.
Yeah. Until Belt proves that he can hit 25 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm tired of hearing about Brandon Belt hitting 25 home runs when he hasn't even done it yet.
Right.
Even as a Giants fan, I've been Belt's biggest detractor for a long time.
He hasn't even hit 20 homers before. Yeah. I mean,
Mike, Belt or Santana?
No, I agree, Santana.
Okay. Last one. Let's do Santana or Chris Carter.
I have Carter ranked higher. Pretty much the same.
It's Carter for me too, but I have just inappropriate amount of love for Chris Carter.
Yeah, I just don't. I'll be the detractor on that. I mean, give me the big OBP guy every time.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Santana.
Yeah, the floor is way higher.
What are you talking about? The floor is way higher. The floor is
on Santana.
I was gonna say
for the OBP guy.
He's talking about Santana.
Yeah, I'm going Santana. I understand the Carter love there just because of the power alone, but you know, he hit 220, I think, this year. I mean, I don't. The average is a massive difference between the two and the floor.
You have to remember how I approach roto leagues in typically in terms of I typically tend to punt average anyway, so it's not a bit. The 220 average for me isn't as big of a deterrent it is for a lot of people.
Sure, I mean, that's fine.
Let's go ahead and move on to a guy that I loved a ton coming into the season. I actually, my bold predictions article at the beginning of the season, I said that Garrett Richards would win the AL Cy Young. I looked pretty stupid because he was injured before, before May 15th, he was done for the year with a tear in his UCL. We've had a bunch of news come out about Garrett Richards as of late. He is attempting to pitch through. He did a plasma-rich injection thing for his elbow. He says he feels fine. He says he feels just as good, if not better, than before the injury. Has pitched a couple of innings in instructional leagues. It seems like Garrett Richards may actually be ready to go to start next season after missing the majority of 2016. So, Joe, where would you be comfortable with Garrett Richards in drafts next year?
Yeah, that's crazy. He just went in our league, right?
Yeah.
209th overall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm okay with him there, kind of. I tend to, as you guys know, present injury predicts future injury. And so this is a guy that opted out of TJ surgery. He's been kind of dealing with this platelet-rich injection, alternative thing. it's like a crapshoot right now. What if he goes out and, you know, he feels discomfort again in his arm, and now you've just drafted, you know, a guy to kind of fill, be an innings eater in your rotation, and he doesn't do anything again. I just, between that, the team, the park, declining value, even in his great seasons, declining value in 5x5 the last 2 years, I'm passing. I'm thinking like even further down for me. He probably won't be on my teams.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Garrett Richards coming into next year?
Yeah, you can't even look at stats on this because it's absolutely irrelevant. It really comes down to, you know, where you're okay taking a lottery pick in your drafts. I think past pick 200 is a completely fair spot to do so. So I'm not going to be, you know, upset with, you know, I believe it was the Welsh that took.
Yeah, the Welsh, you know, took him.
Yeah, which is absolutely fine. For me, I'm not taking him. And we've had one Tommy John survivor without having surgery. And that is Masahiro Tanaka.
Been very, very good.
He has been since, but Garrett Richards is a completely different pitcher than Tanaka is, to be fair.
Sure.
Tanaka survives off of a nasty split finger that he's able to generate a ton of ground balls with. Not to say Richards can't do the same thing, because he does generate a ton of ground balls, but not to cut you off, but
Matt, didn't Wainwright skip or not do a Tommy John once?
No, he had Tommy John.
Yeah. Okay, I thought he had a tear in his UCL and didn't do it, and then ended up getting it a couple seasons later.
No, you're thinking of let me get back. It's not a Cardinal pitcher, but I know who you're thinking of. I'll get back to you. Hold on.
Go ahead, Mike.
But to Mike's point, you know, here Richards relies on that velocity, whereas Tanaka doesn't.
Yeah, and I mean, again, so it really comes down to whether you think that Richards is going to pitch next year. It's my belief that every one of these guys, you know, nobody wants to go into surgery. Nobody wants to have the option of saying, you know what, I want to go under the knife. So, I mean, obviously, you're going to do everything you can to avoid that. And I applaud Richards for doing so. And obviously, thus far, he's been successful in doing so. So I'm not going to completely, you know, hang it off the table that, you know, this isn't a situation that can, you know, be successful for him. But at the end of the day, I think that there's a 90% chance that he goes through Tommy John at some point in the next calendar year. And for me, like, he's just off my draft board entirely. And I think he might actually undergo Tommy John sometime in this offseason. If things don't go swimmingly here, we could easily see a situation where he goes under the knife and we don't have him for all of 2017. I think anybody that's trying to rehab this is pretty much delaying the inevitable.
I just want to say I was right. It was Wainwright did have a
Lance Lynn.
Lynn did it too, because Wainwright did it as well.
Yeah.
Wainwright had a tear in his UCL in 2004 and pitched for 6 years before eventually getting it in 2010.
Oh well, I completely blanked on that. Either way, like, it's still not good odds.
No, and you know, as much as I love Garrett Richards and I've loved Garrett Richards for a long time, and I don't mind the pick. I think what you said is right. I think after pick 200, you're going to take a wild card, because, I mean, looking at the pitchers that are left, looking at the pitchers that were taken after Garrett Richards, or the only pitcher that was taken after Garrett Richards, but a couple who were taken before, I'm fine with, you know, Garrett Richards at that point. The thing I would be a little bit more concerned with in taking Garrett Richards around that spot is the rest of the pitchers that, like, he has on his team. He's got Syndergaard, who has had injury issues throughout the season. He's got Yu Darvish, who's coming off of a Tommy John. Alex Reyes, who has a bright future, but is by no means a sure thing for next year. So, like, I think if you take a guy like Garrett Richards, like, after pick 200, you have to pair him with some sort of anchor.
Yeah, you have, like, that safety around your pitching staff is what you're saying.
Yeah, you have to have some sort of real ace at the top of your rotation, you know, a guy that you know is going to give you 200 innings or 200 innings plus in case you don't have him. Because, I mean, what killed me, for instance, in the Barf League is, you know, I had Garrett Richards, but, like, I paired him with a bunch of guys that also got injured. And, like, all of a sudden I had no pitching the rest of the year. So, I mean, you know, I love Garrett Richards. I don't have a problem with him going there, and I actually was thinking about taking him myself in the next round. But I think you have to have some sort of stability at the top of your rotation if you're willing to take him. Matt, what are your thoughts on Garrett Richards?
Well, I looked up some information on Richards. Richard, through September 28th, he threw a sim game against some Angels hitters. threw 20 pitches to four batters. And then I guess today, actually, he threw an instructs against a bunch of Cubs minor leaguers. The report says he threw 25 pitches to seven hitters. And I'm confused because it says he threw all three of his pitches, but he only has two. So I don't know. But but he said 93 to 97 was the velocity reading. So that's encouraging. But again, that's also only 25 pitches. And like you guys said, it's zero to do with stats here. It's all health. I'll let someone else take the risk. It won't be me.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on to a guy that someone else on this podcast was extremely high on coming into the season. Someone we've talked about a little bit throughout the year. But if I told you, you know, we've been kind of shitting all over Justin Upton throughout the season because of just how poor of a performance he had been putting up. But he finishes hot, ends up with 31 home runs, a .246 average, which isn't great, but better than what he was putting up. So, Mike, you know, being Justin Upton was your guy coming into the season. What are your thoughts on Justin Upton for next year?
Yeah, I mean, this guy, I don't think there's ever been a fantasy player in my life that's played with my emotions more than Justin Upton. It's back and forth with him. I one day I hate him, the next day I love him. It's just so back and forth. As far as, you know, looking at the season as a whole, you know, he really, the worst part about him was his batting average. And obviously the way he started, his first half, 8 home runs and 5 stolen bases with a .231 batting average. The second half of the year, though, he was 4th in ISO among all batters, which is, you know, absolutely great. A little bit behind Ryan Schimpf, which nobody is really talking about, but we need to talk about him at some point because it's insane what that guy did. But yeah, for Upton, he was a top 45 pick going into drafts this season. He obviously will come at a discount going into next year. I think he went to Bloomfield, if I'm not mistaken, in the mock. Where did he go?
Fifth round.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you know, if you're looking at it that way, he had a 23 spot discount based on what we saw this season. At the end of the day, power is up, and you know, he hit 31 home runs, which is, you know, tied for his career high. You gotta like that. I don't what I was kind of banking on for him was a little bit of a stolen base uptick, and we didn't really see that as well. You know, he pretty much had 5 and 4 the first and second half, so there really wasn't any type of meaningful production in that, you know, avenue that we can really bank on for next year. But I think we're going to continue to see what we saw this year with him, which is just hot and cold streaks. That's the way he's always been. If you take out the, I mean, if he didn't have this type of September, he had 12 home runs this month, .300 batting average. If you don't, if you take that out, then we're looking at a, you know, much more, you know, 18 home runs going into the month. You know, if he ended up with 5 home runs, we're looking at 23 on the season, probably even worse batting average. So again, this is a guy that you're going to have to, I think he's more suited for head to head leagues. Because then, you know, if he's hot, then you can put him in. If he's not hot, you can keep him out, you know, for a week or two. If you're in Roto, then I guess it's set it, forget it, but he's going to be inconsistent.
Joe, what are your thoughts on Upton coming in next year?
Yeah, I don't have a lot really to add to that. I think, you know, he fueled by a 53% fly ball rate in September. He's a career 40% guy. So, I mean, you're not going to count on that happening again. And so, you know, if he's a 23 to 25 home run guy, and he's been, in all fairness, he's been consistent in the last 4 years. He's a $20 to $22 player, you know, 17 to 23, 25 home runs, you know, 8 to 10 stolen bases. I mean, that's kind of been his thing. So, I mean, I don't know that he's that discounted where he's being taken. I don't expect him to hit 30 home runs again, honestly. And I kind of wonder, as I was kind of looking down our mock draft, like, would I rather have him in the fifth or have a guy like Adam Eaton in the ninth, who obviously isn't going to have as much power, but he's going to be like a 15-15 type with much better, you know, plate discipline and skills, underlying skills.
Sure.
Like, he could actually out earn him 4 rounds later. So it's kind of like, who would you guys rather have?
I think that's an interesting question, and that to me would come down to my team construct at that point.
Yeah, because then you have to weigh who you're taking in the fifth. You know, because if you look at the other fifth round picks, nothing's stable. Will Myers, Hanley Ramirez, I mean, John Lester is fairly stable, so that's a legitimate guy. But, you know, Jose Bautista went in the fifth, Gary Sanchez. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of kind of wild cards. It's just Gene Segura, you know, who you took, actually, Joe.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, I guess you have to weigh, you know, what you're taking in the fifth based on where you'd be taking Eaton in the ninth. But I think that is a very good discussion to have, you know, based on value.
Yeah. Matt, what are your thoughts on Upton?
You guys pretty much nailed it. A little bit disappointing the Steelers didn't come back, but I mean, he put up a year that's not too dissimilar from in 2015, actually, with the hot streak at the end to carry it. I think fifth round sounds about right. Fifth round and a 15 teamer. I can't argue with that. Joe's pretty much right. I think he's a 17 to $22 player and I don't think you can expect anything more out of him.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think the Steelers are necessarily going to come back, at least to a level that is extremely meaningful, no, considering where they're going to be batting him in the lineup most of the time, right, anyways. So
yeah, I think a lot of the steals came from just being, you know, in San Diego, which obviously the offense is different than Detroit's. So I think a little bit, you know, team philosophy for Detroit, they don't run too much.
And there's just a perception with him, like he always seems to be disappointing. And then you look up at the end of the season and he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, he's kind of a set it and forget it kind of guy.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of set it. You don't worry about him too much. He's going to have a hot month. He's going to have a cold month. You never really know when it's going to start and stop. So you just kind of set it in. At the end of the season, usually you're pretty happy with what you've seen, given the overall kind of numbers. And I think in spite of the fact that he didn't produce quite, you know, at least in the average department than we would have expected, it was a pretty decent season considering what we saw. He ended up kind of giving us, you know, what you expect, you know, minus a few steals and minus a little bit of batting average, but not that much. I mean, he hit .251 last year, so it's not like he hit that much lower than the year prior. So I think he's a fair value kind of where he went in our mock. I don't know if I would end up with him necessarily. I think maybe I would end up, you know, grabbing a Billy Hamilton, you know, or, you know, in the fifth round, I grabbed Todd Frazier and then Hamilton in the top of the sixth. So, and I was pretty happy with that. And probably had Upton been available, I probably still would have gone the way I did. So, I don't think he is a bad value where he went. But I also don't think, he's a guy necessarily going to be targeting.
I will say too, he seems like he's right on the precipice here of, you know, his walk rate went from 11% to 8% this year. His contact rate finally slipped below 70%. So you're kind of like, I would be looking early on in the year. Is this guy walking? Mm-hmm. Are the fundamentals there? Because if not, it could be a nasty fall.
And I mean, you know, to that point, the next year will be his age 30 season. So we're not talking about, you know, we used to talk about Justin Upton as like, well, he's still super young and a ton of potential. You know, he's no longer super young. He's starting to get to that point where he could fall off completely.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and move on to a guy that is just getting into the bright spots of his career. That's Jameson Taillon of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I'll start with you this time, Matt. What are your thoughts on Taillon for next year?
I really like Taillon going forward. I think next year, I mean, with the caveat that you have to understand that he's going to hit an innings limit, probably about 180. He threw 165 this year, so probably 180 is a jump that's realistic with a guy with his injury history. And the most important thing with him is that he stayed healthy. He missed all of 2014 and 2015 with his Tommy John surgery, and then he had a hip and a knee issue during his rehab that slowed that down. So while that's good for the arm, I mean, you also don't want the injuries piling up. And he missed out on a lot of development time. He's still only 24. He's in a great organization with Pittsburgh. They're going to need him now with the Garrett Cole kind of being a little bit uncertain now. And the rotation with him and Glass now, it's a bright future there. But there's a lot to like here about Taillon. The swinging strike rate is a little bit down, 8%. That'll uptake. The stuff is too good for that. I've seen him pitch multiple times. 94 mile an hour fastball and features a big curveball. And it's good. Like I said, the situation's great. I'm looking to buy him next year. I'm trying to find where he went in the mock, and I'm struggling to find it right now.
185.
I think that's a potential bargain right there.
Sky from Razzball paired him with Julio Urias.
Perfect.
The 12th and 13th round.
And Danny Duffy.
In a head-to-head league or a quality start league, you know, he's going to lose a little bit of value because I think the innings are going to be limited. But, I mean, a roto league, I would definitely take a shot earlier than that.
how much do you think his innings are actually going to be limited? Because one of my arguments when he came up this year, when he came up, especially before Glasnow, was I don't know how many innings you can reasonably expect the Pirates to give him. But between, you know, AAA and the majors this year, he has over 165 innings.
Yeah, I bet you he goes to 180. I mean, you got to think 2013 was his last healthy year. That he pitched 147. The Pirates are extremely conservative when it comes to pitching prospects. Their model of got to remember that Garrett Cole was in the minors forever because they wanted him to learn how to get outs without striking guys out. They're very particular with the pitchers, and they play service time games, and that'll still be a thing for Tyon because he didn't have a whole year of service time, so they can mess with that a little bit. They might need him, though, you know, with, like I said, with the Garrett Cole thing up in the air. But I think with all of his health risks, he's only 24 years old. He'll be 25 next year. I still think you have to take it a little bit easy. I still think they cap him about 180.
Joe, what are your thoughts on Tyon for next season?
Yeah, he meets my pitcher trifecta, so I'm looking for like a 7 to 8 to 9 K per nine, like a 2 to 3 walk per nine, and a 50% ground ball rate, and he's right there. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you've got kind of that underlying your skill set, you're 24 years old, Ray Searidge is tutoring you, you're in the right organization, you're in the right park. I mean, I just love this guy. He's got a sick, nasty curveball. There's nothing not to love of outside of the health issues, but I mean, what pitcher won't you say that about? I mean, any pitcher on the board can go down at any point in time. So in the 13th round, yeah, I'm with Matt. I would have taken a chance earlier if I would have had the opportunity, because I just think this guy is trending up, and yeah,
he gets kind of forgotten about. I mean, with
he does. I honestly completely forgot about him. Yeah,
it's like Cole, Glasnow, even in his own organization, he's kind of like the third best prospect. But I love the guy.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Tyon for next year?
Top 5 in ground ball rate in the second half, top 5 in walk rate in the second half among starters, top 10 in strikeout to walk rate in the second half, top 8 in xFIP in the second half. Nothing to not like about him, essentially. He, I think, can be a borderline top 25 starter next season, especially if he doesn't get much of an innings limit. You guys have pretty much been, you know, glowing about him. And, you know, he did all of this despite a 15% home run to fly ball rate and giving up over one home run per nine. I think that can even regress a bit. He did have a 75% left on base rate for the season. And, you know, even if that inflates, you know, I still don't think it's going to be much of a crutch in terms of his overall production. And this is a guy that can grow, 24 years old. You know, the sky is the limit for me. I mean, I'm not going to say that this is going to happen, but this might be a bold prediction going into next year that he has like a Noah Syndergaard-ish type leap going into, when we're looking at the end of the season next year, because he, kind of like what Joe mentioned, he just fulfills all the requirements needed to be an elite starting pitcher in this league. So,
And how many 24-year-old pitchers have a 1.5 walk per nine?
When they come up.
I mean, he's barely even had time in the bigs, and he's already showing. I think if you could show me that, and he learns how to pitch, as opposed to just throw the ball.
Did you see his AAA numbers this year? 61 innings pitched, only 6 walks.
That's just crazy.
Yeah, and the quality starts are there too. You know, obviously Joe knows, but we use the pure quality starts, and you know, the last 3 weren't amazing, but, you know, prior to that, he was consistently not getting crushed in any of his outings, you know, and he only had 1 start this year where he gave up 5 runs. The rest of them were consistently, you know, he had 2 that were 4. All the rest were 3 or under in each and every one of those outings. You can't ask for more than that, especially in division when you're facing the Cubs. You know, he got multiple starts against Milwaukee, who were a juggernaut of an offense at times this year. You got the Mets multiple times, San Francisco. I mean, this is a guy that I think can make a massive leap. Again, that's a kind of a bold statement to say that he can be a top 25 guy next year, but it would not surprise me at all. And I'm actually just going to write it in pen right now in a bold predictions piece. I'm going to say that he's going to be a top 10 guy or something.
Well, I was excited
about him, but man.
Yeah, I thought I was excited too, but
you guys have pumped me up even more. Yeah.
But I mean, isn't that he's going to be better than Cole and better than Glasnow at the end of the year? Is that, I mean, that's essentially
that
what you're saying.
Me.
Yeah, well, that's easy because he was pretty low on Cole.
Yeah, but I also was insanely high on Glasnow, and looking at it right now, I don't think that's even close between the two. I mean, obviously Glasnow had some injury problems.
Yeah, long term, I'm still taking Glasnow.
Yeah, but
because I worry about Tyon's ability to hold up over the course of a career.
Yeah, but this is the argument though. Do you prefer a pitcher that is like Yu Darvish, who has control problems but has immense strikeout upside, or do you prefer a guy that is going to continually have a 7-8 strikeout per nine but limit the walks? I think at the end of the season, when you look at both of when you compare both of those type of starters, like Kyle Hendricks versus Yu Darvish, which one would you rather have? Obviously Yu Darvish has the higher upside, but Kyle Hendricks, I feel will be more consistent throughout a whole season. So it really depends on like the type of style guy you're looking for.
To me, and I agree with that, but you also have to look at, if we're talking from like a dynasty or a keeper perspective, I don't trust Tyon's health yet. And I think what Joe said, earlier is you can't really trust many pitchers, and that's true. But when this guy's had as many red flags as he's had, I think you have to downgrade him a little bit in terms of what his overall value. Where he went is I have no problem. Where he went in the mock draft, I have no problem taking him. But the way you're talking, Mike, makes me think like there are going to be leagues in which this guy is taken as a top 25, top 30 pitcher. I think that starts to get insane.
I don't think he'll get taken there, but I do think he's going to go much higher than 185 when the season starts to come up here in, March, April. I think that 185 right now is just because people kind of glossed over him. We've had a whole season, we're doing this mock, but we're not like really the prepped ranks, and ready yet.
And the ranks of couch managers
are crazy right now.
Are very insane, because their ADPs haven't kind of adjusted to what people actually be doing.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, Tyon doesn't have the big strikeout crazy numbers like Vince Velasquez, who's taken three rounds before him.
And he's only had about 100 innings this year at the major league level. Yeah.
Right? And that's actually a great argument, because I took Velasquez. And guess why I took Velasquez? Because for a stint this year, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball due to that strikeout upside. Pitches in the National League, but all of those same arguments can be made for Tyon. Even though he doesn't have the 9-10 strikeout per nine upside, at least right now, I do think that it's easily conceivable to imagine him having 8 strikeouts per nine next year, and then still limiting the walks to about 1.3.
Not to mention Tyon pitches in a much better park.
Great ballpark. Great. I mean, I won't say great division, but he still has the Reds in there. The Milwaukee. Brewers. Yeah. I mean, both teams that strike out a ton. I know we've gone a long time on Tyon, but I think he's a massive buy. But I do think there will be helium once people start to dig in a bit.
Let's move on to the next guy, because we are we've only gone through four guys. We're running already 45 minutes deep. Let's move on. Let's talk about Starlin Castro, who another guy that's kind of quietly put up a pretty nice year. Joe, what are your thoughts on Starlin Castro? He'll be losing shortstop eligibility next year. We'll be second base only. What are your thoughts on him for next season?
I mean, to make it short and sweet, I mean, he's the Justin Upton argument. So take away his great August where he hit, like 8-9 home runs or something like that.
8 home runs with a .313 average.
Right. I mean, you take that out and you have what you have. I mean, he makes good contact, but he refuses to walk, and that's always going to kill his value. And so I think for me, if I can get him late as a middle infield option, I'm in. But I just, his 10 more home runs that he hit this year translated to a $2 difference in his value from last year. So, great that the power's there. I'm not drafting him unless he's later in for middle infield slot.
Matt, you were pretty down on Starlin Castro to start to beginning the season. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I'm still kind of down on him. I mean, the power spike is nice, but I think everybody had a power spike, and second base is actually really under the radar, crazy deep. Yeah, and I think at best he's a middle, but losing the position versatility, I always like to have a guy that I grab toward the end that can play in a couple spots, like for my bench spot. I think everybody does. And he can't fulfill that requirement for me now because he only has second base eligibility. So, and I also have like an irrational, this is one thing I need to work on as a fantasy owner, I'll fully admit it. I have an irrational, I drop guys that don't walk. And I maybe I shouldn't in 5x5, but, you know, I feel like you have a lower floor if you don't walk. Because then if you don't walk, you're not helping, you're not getting on base by walks, and you're not stealing base. You know what I mean? Not scoring more runs and stuff like that. So that's one thing I need to prove on as a fantasy manager is that. But Castro is not going to be on my radar this year, I don't think.
Mike,
there's other than middle infield spot.
All right. Mike, what are your thoughts?
I'm just going to keep it short. I pretty much feel the same way. I will say that I find it convenient that he hit all those home runs when Gary Sanchez was up. And if you look at his home road splits, he hit 310 at home with 15 of those home runs. When he was on the road, he hit 230 with six. I think that this is a season where he, you know, is going to have probably his best power year, and we're still not going to see the speed. Unless we see a speed uptick, I'm not going to be interested.
You guys heard it here first on the Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcast. Mike Warner is accusing Gary Sanchez of delivering PEDs to the New York Yankees.
Someone's got to replace A-Rod.
I'm glad somebody read through the tea leaves.
Yeah, you're welcome. I like Starlin Castro coming in the year. I think he was on. I think he was one of the players that were like on the majority of my teams when I did my full disclosure article for FanGraphs, where I outlined how many players ended up, or how many multiple shares I've got of each player on my 17 fantasy leagues this year. I think Starlin Castro, I think I had him third most out of everybody else, along with Chris Carter and Garrett Richards. I love Castro coming in the year. I was, you know, pleasantly surprised by his August, because that was a huge month and really kind of recouped a lot of the value I wasn't getting. And I think a lot of people probably dropped him that had him before that point. So, like, you probably a lot of people, you know, especially in shallower formats, probably missed out on his August. But I think he served his purpose this year, because, like you guys said, he's kind of a nice guy to put in your middle infield, can fill in at second and shortstop. But with him losing shortstop eligibility next year, that really kind of hurts his value for me. He's not as flexible, can't move him around. Your team is easily, and I don't buy the 8 home run August. So I'm probably out on Starlin Castro. I don't necessarily mind where he went. I think he went in like the 11th or 12th round, something like that. So the 14th round. So I don't mind that, the 14th round of a 15 team mock. That seems totally fine for me as a middle infield option, but I think there's guys that are interesting late that are still on the board in our mock draft. For instance, you know, Logan Forsythe is still there. Neil Walker is still there. Brett Laurie is still there. So, I mean, there's guys lower on that have some interest to me as well. Let's go ahead and move on to the next guy, and we will talk about Jose De Leon, who has been a fun guy to watch, a nice young guy, top prospect. Matt, you're a prospect guru. What are your thoughts on Jose De Leon for next season?
I'm really high on De Leon, but probably not for next season. I think the Dodgers have a pretty crowded situation with the rotation. I'm not sure. I'm not up on everybody's contract deals, but I mean, I'd imagine De Leon probably starts the year in the minors and eventually makes his way up around May, June-ish when someone goes down. But his major league stint was kind of uninspiring this year, but it was only 17 innings. I wish he got a better shot. Fastball is not – he's kind of the weird pitching prospect nowadays that throws low 90s that's right-handed and gets hyped up. His fastball only averaged 91 miles an hour in his brief major league time. But his best off-speed pitch is a changeup, and that's an excellent thing. Changeup is a field pitch. I talk about this all the time. There's not many guys that really develop good changeups. Once you're already kind of, you know, in pro ball, you either have one or you don't. And the encouraging thing with De Leon is the thing that's against him right now is he doesn't have a really usable breaking ball for an out pitch. But that is something that people do develop. And I mean, the Dodgers are a good organization. They do well with their pitching staff. If you ask Eli, they pitch in the best park in the world. I'm not sure I'm on that camp. But
I don't know why he always says that.
I don't know either. But, the park is nice. If when the situation gets a little bit less crowded there and you can count in for innings,
I don't think it's that crowded. I mean, Rich Hill's going to be a free agent.
They're going to re-sign him. They're going to re-sign him.
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, there's a chance they could, but they still have Kashra. They still have Kashmir. Still have Urias. I think McCarthy and Brett Anderson are both free agents. I know Brett Anderson is.
Brett Anderson is. McCarthy's not.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe it is still crowded.
De Leon Lenz number 7 in the pecking order, according to that little quick rundown. So like I said, I think he starts the year in the minors. He comes up, you know, whenever they need him. I like him, but not for next year, but I do long term, if that makes sense.
Joe, what are your thoughts on De Leon?
You know, nothing other than what Matt said, I totally agree with. I think just here's the wild speculation that I wrote up at the end of the season for HQ is that, you know, Kenley Jansen has said he's going to test the free agent market. There's certainly going to be teams interested in signing him. You know, it'll come down to, you know, what kind of money and years he gets. What if he goes somewhere else? You know, it is pretty crazy to think this, because I know the Dodgers are going to want to develop De Leon as a starter. But, there could be an opening late, you know, in the late part of the games. You know, Pedro Baez pitched great this year, but if Jansen is not there, I wonder if there might be an opportunity for him to come up and put some meaningful innings in the bullpen. I know that's crazy, but probably has a 5% chance of happening. But
I think the only issue I would have with that, and I mean, who knows? We'll know more in, you know, a month or two as kind of the hot stove gets going. But I got a feeling if Jansen leaves, I think they would be a huge player for Chapman.
That's possible too. I mean,
they did trade for him, before that was all, you know, that all fell apart. So I would think the Dodgers, especially if they don't win a World Series this year, you got to think they're going to try to go all in for next year.
I mean, they certainly have the money to throw at anybody they want to. So I highly doubt it happens, but I'm kind of with Matt. Where does De Leon fit? Certainly they've got enough injury prone starters, even in their starting rotation right now, not to mention all the ones that they, you know, have injured right now. But you also have I don't know how to pronounce his name, Ryu, that's sitting there as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah, totally.
I just don't see where I just don't see where he's gonna fit. But he has nothing left to prove, so he might even be a trade.
Triple A is not for De Leon. He dominates Triple A. That changeup is too much for hitters down there.
And who knows, if they could get an amazing trade, maybe they'd be willing to move him, considering their depth in the rotation.
But I mean, so, just given all that,
he was a guy, under the radar guy. Mm-hmm. Sorry to cut you off, Joe. I'm sorry.
No.
There was a speculated rumor. Do you guys remember this? That I forget who the main player was, but the Cubs were trying to work a three-way trade with somebody, and they were going after a cost-controlled arm, people said, and it was a crowded one, and it was blocked, and Dave Cameron kind of went through, to use Mike's phrase, sorted through the tea leaves, and figured out that the player was a good chance. It was Jose De Leon that the Cubs are trying to go get. It was a three-way trade. Who's the big starting pitcher that was rumored to move at the deadline? I for some reason, I'm drawing a blank. It was Pomeranz. They were gonna flip Pomeranz and to the Dodgers. Then we ended up getting Rich Hill. So I mean, there's some truth to the rumor then, because the Dodgers obviously went out and got a starter. They were saying the Cubs are trying to get Pomeranz and they were going to flip him for De Leon. I thought that would have been interesting. So, I mean, other teams see this also, and other teams want him. So, I mean, that shows the value that he has.
Mm-hmm. Mike, what are your thoughts on De Leon?
You know, I think that he is going to be a nice starter. I've always said that he's probably going to end up being a 3 or 4 for fantasy teams when it's all said and done, and I still maintain that stance. But what I saw this year, at least, I wasn't really inspired. You know, I mean, like, he has a crazy straight fastball, really not a lot of movement. And, you know, when you look at, you know, kind of the higher levels in the minors, I know they play, you know, in the PCL, the Dodgers, you know, farm system does, but, you know, his home runs kind of ticked up. He gave up a home run in every single one of his starts. Once he came up, his strikeout to walks really weren't great besides, you know, his first start against San Diego. So I think he still has a lot of development left to kind of get through and, you know, develop a third pitch. So I'm not really in for De Leon next year as much as I think other people will be.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to Lucas Duda, who finally came back this season late after pretty much missing the majority of the year with a back issue. Joe, you took him in the mock draft, so I'll let you kind of lead off this discussion. What are your thoughts on Lucas Duda for next year?
Yeah, I mean, this really goes back to my Jose Fernandez pick in the second and me trying to, you know, at that point I would have taken like a Joey Votto in the second round. And so I just find myself in what, round 12 or 13 now without a first baseman. And, you know, I've listened to the podcast enough to know, you know, you wait on first base, it's kind of a wasteland out there. But, you know, Duda has hit 57 home runs in the last 2 years, not counting this year. You know, he was on pace to hit basically 30 home runs the 2 years prior to that. I mean, it comes down to, can he stay healthy? I mean, he's going to go into his walk year this year. So I, you know, I think there are worse picks at that point, but I mean, to kind of punt first base, you know, I think it was the best, obviously I think he was the best pick on the board at that point. And I still think there's value there. The reports early coming back from back injury were that he was hitting the ball hard. And, you know, that just bodes well for his value. I think he went in the eighth round of our Roto League that just wrapped up. Ryan Bloomfield took him, as a matter of fact, in the eighth round. So I think getting him five rounds later is probably good value. I mean, obviously a risk, but I think there's power there, and he won't kill you in OBP. So,
And I mean, I really like the pick because I think Duda is going to be one of those guys that people forget about going into drafts next year. And I think he could have a Chris Carter-like effect, you know, as a cheap guy who could offer some major power at a huge discount for next season that people have kind of either forgotten about, written off. I really like the pick. I thought it was pretty shrewd and a nice spot for him, especially considering, like we've been talking about, there is kind of a big drop-off at first base. If you don't fill some of your first base and your quarter infield somewhat early, you're kind of looking at scraps. But I think Lucas Duda is one of those scraps that could really have a nice bounce back. And he's one of those guys, like, if he doesn't hit, oh, well, you didn't hit on your 13th or 14th round pick in a 15-team draft. Exactly. That's not a huge deal, but he's got the upside to hit 30. You know, he's hit 30 home runs prior to this big boom in power. So, you know, maybe you project that out even a little bit and be like, this guy's got 35 home run potential, and I just got him, you know, after, you know, pick 150.
Right, and he's not going to hit 220 like Carter.
Exactly,
like he could still hit 240, 250, and not kill you.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Lucas Duda?
I love Lucas Duda. I loved him coming into this year. I will continue to love him. I'm obviously, you're worried about the back injury, and you hope that it's not something that affects his play moving forward. But, you know, his first month this year, he was great. He did exactly, you know, he was on pace to do exactly what he had been doing the last couple of seasons. I think based on what you're going to be getting him in drafts next season, you bring up a great point. I think a lot of people will forget about him. So if a lot of people do and you're able to get him at a solid cost, like I believe you will, I think he'll be a nice, you know, gamble to take.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Duda?
Duda. Why didn't we get that? Mike, I had you pegged for that, right?
I was totally looking forward to that, too.
Get it. Come on, man.
I'm trying to be a little quicker. You know. We spent an hour and a half on Tyon, so.
Yeah. Hey,
I'm trying to get to Hunter Renfro, Duda.
So am I. Duda, I like him a lot. Keep in mind, the only two seasons he's had over 550 at-bats, and in 14 and 15, he hit nearly 30 home runs each year. So that shows you what he is. He's going to hit 240, 250. He's a strong OBP play. You're grabbing him late, so if he doesn't hit, cut him. That's it.
And I think what Matt mentioned about him being a strong OBP guy is really nice, too. You know, between 2012 and 2015, he walked over 11% of the time each year. So yeah,
can't beat that.
I mean, that's really nice. You know, may not have the strongest average, but those of you who play in the OBP format, he's going to get on base. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about Julio Teheran. Mike, what are your thoughts on Teheran for next year?
I think he's just average. You know, he was brought up as a top prospect, and, you know, he did great last season, the season before last. Really disappointed in 2015. And then this year, you know, when you look at the surface stats, he was fine, you know, but there's just nothing above average for me. Like, he's been consistent. I'll give him that. He's been around 8 strikeouts per 9 each of the last few seasons, but we saw the, you know, we just saw him in general not be – I just don't think he's electric. You know, there's nothing that I've seen from him that, you know, I think, you know, makes him – makes me want to draft him on my team. Now, if you need some stability, I'm completely okay with that. He's not, you know, somebody that's going to kill you anywhere. And, you know, he did do, again, okay for this season. But the second half was really poor. You know, when you look at his first half compared to the second, 2.72 ERA to compared to 3.94. The expected ERA in the first half was 3.76, 4.24 in the second half. Ground balls weren't great. We don't know how the new stadium for Atlanta is going to play next season. You know, the strikeout rate also went down. You know, when you look at the surface stats again, it's fine. He's okay, and I think he's a solid starter. But for me, it's just I think this is who he is, and I think we're going to kind of see him, you know, continue to be kind of – we might see him have a down year next year, and then he'll come back and have an average year the year after. I don't think that there's much upside here.
I think you'll – probably have to pay more than I'm willing to pay for him is my issue. I like Teron. I think you bring up a really good point. We have no idea what the park is going to play like next year. I mean, Atlanta is a decent pitcher's park. And so he's gotten to pitch there for the last, you know, however, you know, virtually his entire major league career. So, you know, we've gotten to kind of see him with that kind of base behind him. If he ends up in a stadium that plays a little bit, you know, smaller and people are able to hit more home runs, that could be a huge problem for Teron. I'm probably out on him just because I think there are some people, especially in the industry, that really love him and really believe in him as a guy who could be an ace. And I'm not one of them. So he's still young. He's only going to be 26 next year. But Atlanta sucks. So if you play in wins leagues, you're not going to be seeing a ton of wins, so you got to kind of strike that category already. He took a dip in strikeouts, so that hurts. And I just think his value, his ADP is going to be higher than I'm willing to take him. Joe, what are your thoughts on Teron?
I mean, I kind of feel bad for the guy because everybody's perception of him is better than his true to life reality.
Well, it's because like he broke out on the scene and was just such a stud.
Right. At 20 years old or 19 years old. But meanwhile, the guy has produced outside of last season. So he $18 this year, $22 in 14, $16 in 13. You know, he is what he is. He doesn't have the big velocity. You know, my biggest problem with Teron is, you know, he doesn't produce the ground balls. Like, I wish his ground ball percentage was more like 45, 46%. That would be really cool. Or if he could get left-handed batters out at all. And if he can't do one of those things, then he's going to be your number three guy that eats 180 innings and gives you 160 strikeouts. And it's going to be unsexy. And I think you're exactly right. I think the name value and the perception automatically continues to inflate his value. I don't think it did in the mock.
I'm trying to find him.
No,
right
he
now.
Just got taken lately. It was right. Oh my goodness! It was.
Yeah,
right by Hayward. 2.13.
By Aaron.
It was right in front of Jameson Taillon, which I think we're all like, well, we would take Taillon.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's what he is, and I don't see outside of him developing a new pitch or grabbing some velocity later in his career that he's going to do anything more than what he's doing.
But I mean, you know, considering where he went in this mock, and I mean, this is all industry guys, so you know that adds a little bit of something in terms of, you know, people kind of being able to look at kind of the underlying statistics and not just kind of going with the flow of the ADP. But I mean, I'd be fine with him where he went.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's Aaron's fourth starting pitcher after Bumgarner, Harvey, Keuchel. I think that's a fantastic pick for Aaron.
Well, that's perfect, and he should be your four. If you going to draft Teron, he should be your four instead of a three or a two.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting question would be, of the guys taken in that round, you know, you got Rich Hill, Tanner Roark, Jameson Taillon, who we've already talked about, Teron and Taiwan Walker. Like, do you take Teron over any of those guys?
I think it is completely.
And then Taiwan Walker is pretty close.
I think it's team construction. That's a team construction question. Because if I have, like, with Aaron's rotation already of Bumgarner, Harvey, and Keuchel, I think I would probably go with more upside and a little bit of risk because I feel like at least with Bumgarner at the top, I know I've got a stud. You know, whereas, like, maybe if I had, like, you know, Christopher Welsh, we were talking about him taking Garrett Richard as his fourth pitcher, but there's a little bit more risk to his staff. I think Teron would have fit really well in his staff, because then that's a guy I know I'm going to get probably, you know, 190 innings from Teron. They're going to be of good quality. You know, it's not going to be great, but it's an anchor of sorts, you know, as my fourth pitcher. Where I need a little bit of stability in case something happens to one of my other guys or two of my other guys.
Yeah, agreed.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Teron?
Oh, I already talked about Teron.
I'm assuming you mean me.
Oh, Matt, sorry.
I have him in our 20 team dynasty league, and my original plan going into the offseason, before I hate talking about it like this, but before I lost Fernandez, was to trade Teron.
Then why'd you bring it up, Matt? Then why'd you bring it up?
In our league, I think you could have gotten a haul.
Yeah. Now I kind of need him because my pitching's thin, and he's dependable enough to where I kind of know what I'm going to get. But like one thing with Teron is like you look at the numbers and you really find how worthless of a stat ERA is, because you look at his rates and stuff. You know what I mean? His ERA is all over the place, and it's hard for a lot of other people that just glance at all that to put a true value on him.
And you look at his FIP and his XFIP.
Yeah.
This
year he underperformed them both.
Mm-hmm.
He beat them both this year. I also think it'd be wise for Atlanta to move him. So, because the contract he has is ridiculous. He's got next year at $6 million, 2018 at $8 million, 2019 at $11 million. So, like, he's got some serious value. If they wanted to move him, I think they should.
Yeah, I don't see them doing that, moving into a new stadium. I think they're going to try to put a halfway competitive squad on the field. So.
And check this out. Against people in his division, against Washington this year, 5.5 ERA. Against Philadelphia this year, 5.4 ERA. Against Miami, 6.75 ERA. And those are all in 9 starts. Now, he did do well against the Mets in 4 starts. But, I mean, 3 of the 4 division opponents crushed him this year.
Yeah.
Sounds like a sequencing issue to me.
Could be.
I mean, it seems predictable. I guess when you only have 2.5. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at his zone profile. I mean, he just hits right in the heart of the plate for lefties. I mean, he just can't.
Yeah. If you can't get lefties out, they're gonna be some lineups that just absolutely wreck you.
Yeah.
Bold strategy, Cotton. See how that pays off for you.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on. Talk about an interesting guy. Hunter Renfro has come up at the end of the year for the Padres. Now that they don't really have anybody else playing on their team anymore. And it has shown some pretty impressive power. I mean, it's only 4 home runs, but a lot of them have been moonshots. So, Mike, what are your thoughts on Hunter Renfro moving into next year?
It's hard for me to pinpoint where he is going to go in drafts. I'm assuming he's going to start off next year in AAA once again. So, you know, I don't think he'll be somebody that, you know, everybody is, you know, trying to draft at a high spot or anything prior to the season starting. But, you know, the calling card is power. He obviously has that. If you haven't watched him, the kid is massive. I mean, he's just built like a freight train. And, you know, I think the power will play pretty much immediately. You know, as far as the home ballpark, San Diego, like I've mentioned before, isn't, you know, as much of a pitcher haven as people might think. He hit 34 home runs between AAA and the majors this year. You know, he showed a pretty good strikeout rate in the majors as well. Such a small sample size, so you can't really, you know, glean anything off of that. But again, really massive power upside. I don't think he is going to be a, you know, great batting average guy, and once he, you know, reaches the majors at a full, you know, in a full season. But I think, you know, to expect 20, if he was to get full season at bats next year, 25 home runs with a 260-ish, you know, maybe 250-ish average is something certainly in the cards. They hit him 5th and 6th a ton, so I think that's where he would kind of sit in the lineup as well. So I think that Renfro could certainly be a nice cheap power source if you wanted to go that route.
I wish he would walk a tad bit more.
He won't ever.
Yeah, that's
out of me. No, he won't.
But I mean, it's like I think he could become such a more complete player if he would just take a walk every now and then. But I mean, I think he's got immense power upside, but I agree with Mike. I think, you know, San Diego probably not looking like a team that's going to be able to compete next season, has no reasons to start him in the majors. He's a guy that I would assume would be up around Memorial Day. So you've got to, it's kind of, if you're going to draft him, you've got to survive without him for the first 2 months of the season. I think he's a guy, though, that in dynasty and keeper formats, I don't think his price is so high right now that you can't go out and get him. And I wouldn't mind. I think he'll be a nice power source for years to come. Matt, what are your thoughts on Renfro?
I'm not super high on Renfro. I think Mike nailed it, though. I think he's a good power source, but I'm worried, I'm skeptical that he's not going to make enough contact to utilize the power. If you watch him swing, it's really stiff upper half, and he sometimes he gets his arms, like they kind of, he's fighting himself. He wants to get extended, and he doesn't. When he does get extended, as you can see, he put balls on the roof of that warehouse out there, mm-hmm. So you know the power is there. But I'm worried about, like, I mean, I think he could power the city of San Diego with his wind factor from swinging and missing so much, because he's going to get tied up. He's a bigger dude. Up and in, he's going to get tied up a little bit because he has trouble clearing the hands. The walk rate is non-existent. I don't think you can expect much of a growth there. Yeah, he hit 371 in 36 plate appearances, but again, that's 36 plate appearances. I would temper expectations a little bit. He's still a useful guy, but like he could have very easily struggled like Aaron Judge did, and I wouldn't have been surprised either. Like, that's just kind of the type of player he is. And he also, a very underrated thing, a very cool thing about him is he has an absolute cannon in right field if you've seen him throw.
Joe, what are your thoughts on Renfro moving into next year?
Well, I think that last point can't be underestimated because, you know, where we don't play defense in fantasy, it's what keeps guys on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy can throw. The guy is obviously a right fielder. So I think
he's a good right fielder, too.
That's right. I think so. In that sense, once he's up and he's going to play. So that's a good thing. But I think for next year, especially in a yearly league, the best thing you can do is draft him late, find a guy with no power and trade him as soon as you can. Or after he comes up and he hits, you know, 8 home runs in May, you know, that's when his value is going to be high because the book's going to get out. Pitchers are going to stop throwing him fastballs. And I don't think he's going to adjust. And so I think his best value probably next year is as a trade candidate. If I can, in a dynasty league, if I can get more of an Austin Meadows type profile out of that, then I would much rather go that direction.
All right. Let's move on and talk about Rossell Iglesias, who was a guy that a lot of people were really high on. Kind of coming into the year as a sleeper pitcher, to the point where like his value just skyrocketed in drafts and people were taking him way too high. He never was able to put it together as a starter, but has been the closer for the Reds towards the end of the season. So, Joe, what are your thoughts on Iglesias going into next year? Do you think he could be an elite closer?
I mean, it all comes down to semantics. Could he be? Yeah, absolutely. I think he's got the stuff to do that. He wants the job. I actually read an article the other, I don't know if it came out maybe in August, that he actually said, I want this job, which is just kind of a weird thing to hear from a young guy. But, man, I think you have to weigh the risk there. I mean, if you're going to draft him thinking he's going to be my second closer, you better make real sure before you do that, because I still think Cincinnati's going to try to get him as a starter. And I actually think he has more value as a closer. I think he actually got more value this year from his 7 saves than he did as a starter the previous year. So I would say, and I also read a Washington Post article today that said Cincinnati's going to spend in the free agent market on bullpen pieces. So, you know, there's a lot of risk. I mean, not Kenley Jansen type money, but a Daniel Hudson type, you know, who's going in the free agent market might be someone they would target. So I think, you know, just like this year where you go in with, you know, Brad Hoover and Jumbo Diaz and all these like castaways and castoffs, I just don't trust Iglesias, which is why I actually took David Robinson a couple picks before Iglesias went in our mock.
Mike, what are your thoughts, sir, on Iglesias coming into next year?
Yeah, a ton of talent for Iglesias, and I think that he's a very high upside arm. The problem is the innings. You know, you can't rely on him to be a starting pitcher because he hasn't hit a threshold of innings that we that would make us feel comfortable about rostering him as a starter. But then at the same time, we can't feel comfortable about his role because we don't know what the Reds will do in the offseason. They need to bolster that bullpen, not just in terms of the closer, but they need depth. They had Tony Cingrani going out there for the highest leverage index amongst the relievers, which is terrible. They shouldn't have that happen at all. Iglesias was quality when he was in the bullpen this year, and I don't think that should just be, you know, taken, you know, out of the account here. But for me, like, I think he's gonna be off my draft board until I have a clearer picture in terms of what his role will be. It's just hard to draft somebody when you don't know.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Iglesias for next year?
I think the Reds should keep him in the bullpen. I think he should be the closer. I mean, he destroys right-handed hitters. That slider is filthy. Righties hit it combined 169 to 253, 230 off him this year. That's good for him. And I think an underrated aspect of this is the Reds, they kind of believe in the, seems like with the way they built their minor league system, the quantity over quality kind of thing. They have a ton of young arms that are on the cusp of the major leagues, or if not in the majors already. Guys like Cody Reed, Robert Stevenson, Desclafani still counts. John Lamb's around there somewhere. None of them are that great. Brandon Finnegan's around, but they need rotation spots, and I think the obvious move is to throw Iglesias in the pen and try to develop another some more of those arms. I think the bullpen is the logical place for him.
I agree. He's probably best suited for the bullpen. I've never been a big fan of Iglesias to begin with. He was a guy that I never really understood the hype on the last couple years, and I don't think he's a guy I'd necessarily want. Even as a closer, if I knew he was going to be the closer. This just reminds me of Neftali Feliz, of Chapman early on in his career, when these guys just kept getting moved between starting and relieving, starting and relieving, starting and relieving. You know, for Chapman, it worked out really well. For Neftali Feliz, it has not worked out so well. And I don't think Iglesias has the upside that warrants, targeting in drafts, especially if I'm drafting early in the season, early in the preseason. So he's probably a guy that I'm not interested in coming into 2017. Let's go ahead and move on, and we'll talk about Danny Espinoza, and that'll probably just wrap things up for today since we're running pretty long. We only have two more guys, so we'll just get through those. Danny Espinoza is a guy that I had as my my shortstop sleeper coming into 2016. While I didn't think I would get quite as many home runs, he hit 24 this year. I'm pretty pleased from what I got in terms of his value. But, Mike, what are your thoughts on Danny Espinoza for 2017?
Well, guess what, Justin? He actually had the same value this year than he did last year, hitting 13 home runs. You want to know why? Because he only had a 209 average.
Yeah.
Kind of a problem there. I will say the 24 home runs and 9 stolen bases is great. You know, especially if you had some other batting average assets on your team, you can't really complain about Espinoza. 29 years old. I will say this. You know, he had a massive month. You know, June he hit 9 home runs, hit 309 that month. If you look at his second half though, he only had 6 home runs, a 176 batting average. He kind of killed you in the second half of this season, you know, really not even useful. So if you did write him out in the first half and then end up dropping him in the second half, good for you. In terms of next season, I think that you can expect about the same. There's really not much that you can add. I don't think he's somebody that's going to hit for more power than he has this season. He's a switch hitter, but he, you know, last season he hit really decent against lefties. This year he went back down to hitting 202 against them. He did, the one positive is he got full playing time, even though Trey Turner came up. So that's something that's nice to see, and his walk rate isn't terrible, but the strikeout rate, I mean, two of the last 3 years, it's been, you know, 34% and 37% respectively. That's insane. You can't really be productive when you're doing that. His hard contact isn't great. He did have a bump in fly balls this year, a career high actually, except for in 2010. I think that's kind of a benefit and why he, you know, partially why he hit the home runs that he did. But, if you look at the second half on, he was not even a rosterable player, and I think that's kind of what you should expect going into next year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's a guy that you want to be going out and picking up or getting in a number of drafts. I mean, the second half has been kind of awful for him. The thing he also loses is the multi-positional eligibility that he had in a number of formats. You know, he was eligible at second base and shortstop. He would tend to pick up eligibility at other positions throughout the year. And this year, or going into 2017, he'll be shortstop only. And a guy that, you know, he's not going to hit 24 home runs again. I would probably bank on 15. And if he hits, you know, close to 200 again, we've got some problems. So he's probably, I think there's just second base, shortstop, the middle infield in general is just so much deeper than I think anybody expected. And I was one of the proponents that it was going to be deeper than most people expected. And so I think Espinosa, a guy that probably outside of extremely deep formats, is probably best left for the waiver wire. Joe, what are your thoughts on Espinosa?
Yeah, I got nothing to add there. I think Mike nailed it. There's guys around that time, like a Neil Walker, mm-hmm. like a Logan Forsythe, Joe Panic, Colton Wong even. Jose Reyes is way down. Like, I would rather take a shot on any of those guys probably. So this is just not the profile that I like on my team, and I skip those guys. I think he's in the Castro mold. I think he's in the – who's the other guy we talked about? The Upton kind of mold where mm-hmm. if they don't have their big months,
you're in a lot of trouble. Yeah,
they just kill you the rest of the year.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Espinosa?
Pass. 209 batting average. I'm out.
All right.
I mean, he doesn't offer much cheap power, but like you said, there's plenty of better options out there.
All right. The last guy we're going to talk about, this may be kind of a quick conversation, so that's why I decided we'd just go ahead and kind of finish it out. Tyson Ross has not pitched really at all this season. I mean, what do you have? A total of five innings and a third at the major league level. A total of six innings between major and minor league starts. Been dealing with injury issues. There's been some reports that he may still need surgery after sitting out pretty much all of 2016. I wanted to know from you guys, is there any format where you would take a shot on Tyson Ross? Go ahead and start with you, Matt.
There's worse roster spots probably in a 20 team. Yeah. But I'm not – you can't really bank on anything. It's just pretty much a stash. I mean, I kept Lance Lynn on my roster all year this year because, I mean, it's hard to find depth in that league. And, I mean, if someone has Ross and you can afford the spot, I'd advise doing it because – his upside, I guess, compared to what's on the waiver wire is pretty good. But, I mean, it's tough to tell with the shoulder injury, and it's so many setbacks now, and now he might have surgery, so who knows.
Joe, what are your thoughts on Tyson Ross?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly formats, you know, your dynasty keeper formats, you're always looking to buy low. And if there's upside to be had, and he's going to go for pennies on the dollar right now, so go ahead and, you know, he could probably even be a throw-in at this point in a larger deal, so I would do something like that, but there's no way I'm drafting him next year in a redraft.
Mike, you agree with these guys?
Yeah, he's a heavy slider guy, and that tends to be a problem for pitchers. He's hitting almost age 30 now. You know, like Joe said, there's always a place to draft a guy depending on the draft and all that stuff, but I'm pretty much out until further notice.
All right, that is going to wrap us up. Joe, why don't you tell people again where you can reach on Twitter, what you do over Baseball HQ, and give yourself some plugs.
Yeah, so I'm at Twitter, at Shoeless Joe P. So give me a follow. HQ, you know, we're going to be doing our first pitch Arizona, so come see us in November. Hit me up or DM me so you can get $100 off your registration. If not, we'll be starting off our off-season content here in the next couple months. But in the meantime, I'll be scouring the NL West to do, you know, more front office thinking and who's going to be getting playing time. So that's what I'll be doing again next year. And meantime, we'll be following the Rangers. So let's see what they do.
All right, Mike, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
Yeah, first and foremost, thanks, Joe, for coming on. You're an amazing writer, and a really nice guy, it seems. So appreciate you coming on. Obviously a great analyst as well, and definitely can't wait to meet you. That'll be awesome.
It's all perception. It's all perception.
I love the Twitter handle too, Shoeless Joe. That's pretty awesome. I wish I came up with something like that. But you can reach me at my very average and mediocre at Mike Werner FWFB Twitter handle. And we're going to keep going through the offseason. Check out friendswithfantasybenefits.com. I have a ton of stuff going on there. The daily matchups column is over at baseballhq.com. So, you know, sad face, you won't be reading my stuff there for a while. But the offseason is here. Enjoy the playoffs. And if you're into fantasy football, we have a ton of stuff going on there as well. So check it out.
And Matt, tell people where you can reach and what you're working on.
At MDTomp FWFB, I changed it. Twitter handle.
Come to the dark side,
I figured I can. I rep my brand enough. I can rep our brand now.
Appreciate it.
I am actually doing a dynasty mock draft, first year player mock draft right now with some of the guys from Razzball, and I'm going to be on that podcast this week. We're recording on Wednesday, so I'm assuming it comes out on Friday. So check that out. I'm constantly updating my rankings, prospect rankings, positional rankings. I did my catcher rankings recently, and I don't have Buster Posey ranked number one, so tweet at me.
Oh, God.
Are you serious right now?
He's going to have Gary Sanchez number one.
No, I'm not. Jonathan Lucroy, staying in Texas.
Get out of here right now. Joe, tell me he's absolutely high.
Oh, I love Jonathan Lucroy.
Hey, oh, there you go.
Oh, my God.
Joe, since I got you on here, thank you for coming on, man. I appreciate it. And I have one question for you.
Go for it.
How's David Freeze perceived down in Texas?
David Freeze?
He's not perceived at all. That's the answer.
I don't think anybody knows who David Freeze is.
Oh, that's not true.
Unless they somehow he plays football on the Cowboys now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. No, we're still smarting from 2011. It's terrible.
I had to get that in there.
Thank you very much, though. Appreciate you bringing that back up for me.
Yeah, no problem.
Matt, are you going to expand your Twitter trolling to not only Cubs fans, but now Rangers fans as well?
I don't troll anyone on Twitter.
Whatever.
Yeah,
you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read my baseball stuff over at FanGraphs. I just finished kind of a series on fantasy ethics called The Unwritten Rules. Definitely go check out those posts. I'll probably do another one on that one coming here soon, but I believe that I have to do kind of a review of my 2016 bold predictions. So that'll be interesting to kind of go through and see how I did on those. I actually think I did fairly well. We'll definitely see how it plays out in the article itself that comes out. My article on there comes out typically on Wednesdays. You can read all my football stuff on friendsoffantasybenefits.com, and check out all our stuff for football. I do point spread picks every Sunday. Mike and I do the Thursday or the Friday podcast that preview all the games for football. We got basketball content coming out pretty soon, and that podcast starting up pretty quickly, so definitely check that all out. And that will wrap us up. Joe, thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate it.
All right, for Mike, Matt, Joe, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn. Trying to get a handle on who we are. Sleep all night. Hook. Falling in love is never by the book. Getting close beneath the blanket of a million stars.
Doo-da, doo-da.
There it is.